Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having.
No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. Let me just say that 2022 is kicking off to be a strange year indeed.
Yeah. Okay. I don't even want to get into all that. Like, it's just been... But we're here now and we're recording.
Yes. I'm just going to blame it on astrological stuff.
Yeah.
Because that's my go-to.
Not mine, but I'm on board.
Whatever gets you through, whatever gives you an answer at the end of the day.
Agreed. Okay, so before we get started, I just want to remind you all, Patreon is out there. We have a ton of content. There's stickers, notebooks if you sign up for an annual subscription. Tons of fun stuff.
I feel like if you signed up now, you'd probably have... In all fairness, a couple of hours at minimum of content.
Amy, they'd have like at least 24 hours, 2 years.
See? It'll last you.
Okay. Okay, I actually want to shout out Hannah. This case baffles me. And it did when I first heard about it. And then, you know how those cases, like you first hear about them and they kind of fall off your radar? But then it comes back into your orbit and you're like, I remember, and what the heck happened?
Absolutely. So when you mentioned the name of this person, I could picture her very clearly and very rough details to the case. But my exact response was probably along the lines of what did happen.
So I'm just going to dive in. Today we're going to talk about Leah Roberts. Now, Leah was born in July of 1976. She had a super close-knit family in Durham, North Carolina, which literally right in my neighborhood, right? Like, less than 30 minutes. My office is in Durham, if I ever go back there.
Yeah, yes.
And I want to say, Leah grew up in a pretty quote-unquote normal childhood. And what I mean by that is there's no trauma, there's no outstanding anything. It's just her and her siblings... had an uneventful childhood. She had an older brother and an older sister, and they, Kara and Heath, and they just seemed like a solid family unit. Leah was the baby. That's, you know, the close-knit family they have. Now, in 1993, Leah is 17 at the time, and in her senior year of high school, and her dad is diagnosed with a pulmonary disease. This really... It sounds like impacts the family, but...
Yeah, how it's scary.
It's really, as someone that, like, my dad has had heart attacks, my dad has had cancer. Like, I get it, and it's terrifying. Now, her dad seemed to be, you know, in rougher health, but pushed through.
That's great.
Leah pushes on and starts school at NC State. In Raleigh, North Carolina State University, in 1995. She, you know, isn't that far from home. My guess would be no more than 30 to 45 minutes, even if she's on, like, the Chapel Hill side of Durham, interstate, whatever. So she's close enough that she can be home if she needs to. Freshman year goes great. In 1996, Leah's mom dies suddenly of a heart disease. This kind of shook the family because her dad was the sick one, you know, and now her mom passed away.
Yeah, totally makes sense.
So Leah takes some time off from school, kind of figures out, like, she wants to spend time with her family, spend time with her dad, sort of loses her way a little bit. And I don't mean that in, like, a negative way, just in a, am I sure I'm on the right pathway? Fall of 1998, after about 2 semesters off, she went back to state. Leah couldn't catch a break. Shortly after school started, she T-boned a transfer truck, like a Big Mac truck, and was in...
Oh my gosh, she's lucky to have gotten through that.
So she shattered her femur and punctured her lung. She was able to recover, albeit with a metal rod in her femur now. And
this is no joke.
No, not at all. And Leah talked to Kara, her sister, after the accident and basically said that when she saw the truck pull out and she knew she was going to hit her, she was 100% certain she was going to die.
I could see that.
Leah kind of takes this between her mom's passing and her near-death experience and decides she wants to live life to the fullest. You know how, like, we say there's got to be something more than working to pay your bills that you need to survive. Like, she wants to, like, do something.
And I completely understand that feeling.
So she takes a semester and goes to Spain to study abroad.
That sounds amazing and a time well spent.
Exactly. So she comes back from Spain and she signs up for a spring semester in Costa Rica. She's really embracing life. So she's supposed to go to Costa Rica. 3 weeks before she's supposed to get on a plane, her dad succumbs to his illness.
That is awful. I mean, I'm sure she's not even thinking about going away or whatever, but a girl who's been through so much and deserves to focus on herself, it just couldn't have been a worse time. Well, I don't know. It's arguable. There's just no good time.
Well, her siblings, her older siblings, really wanted her to go to Costa Rica. They were like, still go, still do you, dad would have wanted you to go type thing. So she does. She gives her sister power of attorney because the estate is still being settled for her parents. And heads to Costa Rica. Her roommate actually came and visited her there. It was really good for her. She comes back from Costa Rica, and she's a semester away from graduating with dual degrees in Spanish and anthropology. And Leah decides she's not going to go back to school. Her sister, Kara, and her brother, Heath, really were like, it's one semester, please just do it. But Leah was like, nope, and really embarked on a path of self-exploration. She learned to play the guitar, she took up photography, she adopted a pet kitten. She began to hang out in local coffee shops, writing poetry about, like, quote-unquote, the meaning of life.
Yeah, death, illness, terrible events that happen to you shape who you are, and everyone deals with it differently, and it sounds like this is how all of that resonated with her.
Yes, she just really wanted to say, like, life is about more and, you know, all the things, you know? Now, she became really fascinated with the writer Jack Kerouac. Do you know anything about him?
I don't think so, but I don't also tend to recognize writers. I might recognize their body of work.
Sure. So one of his most famous quotes is live, travel, adventure, bless, and don't be sorry.
Love it.
Me too. And so he's from Lowell, Massachusetts. And he basically wrote books, novels about packing up and just hitting the road. He really glamorized just living the in a van, traveling the country lifestyle.
Actually, this is something that is really popular and glamorized right now in present times, the 2020s. That van life and stuff, we hashtag it all the time. But understandably, this takes place well before that movement. But it's so funny to look back because I'm sure everyone thought this was risky and bogus and impossible. Whereas nowadays, we're like watching people do it with ease. Well, that's not fair to say, and I apologize. Like, it's not easy. There are sacrifices, but it's a doable thing.
Yes. Now, he published multiple books. One of them, his most famous one, is On the Road. He really influenced artists like Bob Dylan, The Beatles, and The Doors with his writing about...
Oh.
On the Road is, according to the bibliography information, it's on virtually every list of 100 greatest American novels.
Fascinating. Okay.
So, basically, Leah really embraced this. She was fascinated to the point that she told her roommate they should pack up and just go for a road trip west. And her roommate was like, yeah, sure, I wish. I have a job and school and bills and, you know. Now, I don't know how it was suggested, because I think about, like, if we were in college, right, I would have looked at you and been like, we should go to Bahamas. You know, like, just, like, in passing. Didn't mean I meant we should, like, book a ticket right now.
No, it's, let's plan a date, when is good for you.
And sometimes you're just talking about things that you actually have no intention of doing.
It's fun to dream.
So, I don't know if her roommate interpreted as, like, a pie in the sky, or if it was supposed to be tomorrow, you know?
Okay.
So let's go to spring of 2000. Leah is living with her roommate, Nicole, living off her inheritance, writing, playing guitars, just exploring herself, exploring life. March 9th, 2000. It's a totally normal day. Literally nothing to note. She talks to Kara and vaguely made plans. And what I mean by that is they were like, oh, we'll get together soon. Okay, sure, we'll talk. I mean, they only live 30 minutes from each other. There wasn't like, on Thursday, we will do X. It was like, we'll make plans soon.
Got it.
Also, Nicole asked Leah to come with her to babysit the next night. And Leah was like, yeah, sure, that's no problem. Nicole heads to work. We assume Leah went to a coffee shop, is what Nicole assumed. We know now she didn't, but... Now, Nicole gets back from work, and Leah's not there. And I want to make a point right here, because a lot of people are like, wow, that's weird. You didn't know where your roommate was? No, it's not. As someone that lived with a roommate, I didn't know where you were at all times. Like, if I came back from class, and you weren't in the room...
Oh, yeah, the only time I think we would let each other know for sure... Without a doubt, is if we'd be gone for a weekend or something.
Right. Like, if I got back from the room and you weren't there, I wouldn't be like, oh my gosh, Amy's not here.
Yeah, it could be class. She could be staying in someone else's dorm. No big deal.
Right. Leah has no commitments, right? No school, no job, no nothing. She comes and goes how she pleases. Now, I want to remind you, it's 2000. Cell phones are just starting to become a thing, and social media and texting are non-existent. So when Nicole gets up in the morning, she gets a call from one of Leah's friends on the house phone. And she takes a message and she moves on, right? Like, that's how things go. Now, Leah doesn't show up to help babysit with Nicole. So Nicole thinks that's weird. Saturday and Sunday, Nicole get multiple calls from various people looking for Leah. She either missed plans or was supposed to call them and didn't. So Nicole gets a little bit worried now and calls Kara, Leah's sister. They don't panic right away, and they basically start kicking off calling everyone they could think of and every place they could think of that Leah may be at. Monday, March 13th, they have not heard from Leah still, and Kara files a missing persons report with the Raleigh police. The Raleigh police, the town like I live next to. Want to guess their response?
Do we even want to play this game anymore? We all know what they said.
I wrote, if you guessed that she was 23 and allowed to leave, you win. And I want to write here, say Kara is an amazing big sister. Okay? She does all the things right. And we'll talk about them as we go.
Oh my gosh, this is you if it was Jen.
Oh, 100%. Yes, nothing is sacred, Jen, if you go missing. So Kara goes to Leah's help. Leah's house, rather, and with Nicole's help, they go through all her things. Let me tell you what isn't there. A lot of her clothes, a lot of her person items, her cat, and the cat carrier are all not there.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
Because I don't have any siblings, so I'm curious as to what this experience is like. If you went over to Jen's house to kind of check it out, would you know her wardrobe?
Yes. I wouldn't know, like, certain things, but I would notice if a chunk of clothing was missing.
Is there anything that you think you would notice that someone else wouldn't?
At Jen's?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd notice what care was taken for her dogs, because her dogs are like her kids. I would notice, like, how her kitchen is, if she's, like, cooked recently or not cooked recently, and her work stuff, because she works from home. I would have a good impression if she'd been there or not been there.
Okay, just curious.
Now, so all those things are not there. A couple things are there that we need to talk about. I just texted you a picture of the front of a note that is there.
I love when you send me surprises.
I know. You're getting another one right after it, so. Do you know what that's from?
That looks like, that creepy cat from Alice in Wonderland.
Yes. The Cheshire Cat. Which, by the way, down the rabbit holes is actually an Alice in Wonderland quote.
That is true.
Full circle moment for us, guys. All right, so that's the front of the note. This is a snippet of part of the note. And we're going to break it down, so I'm going to post it to our social media. But I want you to tell me what stands out to you and what you think.
I had to read it a couple of times, especially towards the end, because the handwriting is, while really nice, it's hard to get used to someone else's handwriting. I guess I see it as someone's going away on an impromptu trip. Don't know where, but it doesn't sound like forever.
Okay, I agree with you. So with the note, there's cash, approximately a month's worth of expenses. And in the note, it says, Nicole, this is to cover bills for while I'm gone. So we immediately think, okay, she's going to be back, you know, within the month or so, because whatever. Now there's, it says April 23rd. Amy, can you read what's under April 23rd?
On the road, in quotes, like maybe quote from the song, just that catchy phrase.
Or the title of the book by Jack Kerouac.
Also, yeah, okay, fair. No, I'm not suicidal. I am...
the opposite.
The something, remember...
Jack Kerouac.
I'm the opposite, remember something. Gotcha. Okay, so she immediately... must have known that my behavior would seem odd to other people. So I need to reassure them because they will think I'm going out of my mind.
Yes. That's exactly how I interpret it too. You know, it's, I'm not suicidal. I'm the opposite. Remember Jack Kerouac? What I get from that is exactly what her sister got, which is she's going on a trip. She'll be back. She's on basically on a self-exploration journey. Now, Kara doesn't love it. Right? Because...
but they have to have some inkling that there's no convincing their sister when she has a plan. Just like they couldn't convince her to finish that semester in school.
Like I said, Kara doesn't love it, but she realizes that she left purposely and she plans to come back.
And I'll add that she was responsible and thoughtful of others because A, she left a note, but B, she didn't stiff people with her bills.
Well, right, but she also didn't call anyone and tell anyone she was going. Either way.
No, but as a young person who quite literally could leave, stay out for days at a time without telling a loved one that they're safe, there were some indicators that she was mindful of
yes.
the burden she'd be putting on others, even if it wasn't completely ideal.
Yes, I agree with you. So here's where Kara gets even smarter. Remember that Costa Rica trip?
You bet, 100%.
Leah made Kara her POA. So Kara logs right into her bank account.
Right.
I mean, that's exactly what I would do if I could.
If I had access, yep.
So we find out Leah made a withdrawal of $3,000 on March 9th.
Okay, so this was very thoughtful, very planned out.
Yes, and it sounds like she left some of that there, but not all of it, because we'll get to that in a second. Kara also sees that there's a motel room charge in Tennessee, and there's gas and food charges across the whole country. Then again, on I-40 and then I-5. Now, just for reference, I-40 from Raleigh, if you don't get off it, right, you just drive straight, you'll hit Bakersfield, California in 37 hours. Now, obviously, she didn't drive straight, but, like, I mean, like, if you just drive, you don't have even have to get off the highway.
Right.
So it looks like Leah just went straight to California. Then she heads north on I-5 to Brooks, Oregon. Now, Raleigh to Brooks, Oregon, and the route she took is about a 3,400-mile drive. 3 days, give or take 12 hours, she's in Brooks, Oregon. So she's driven 50 out of 82 hours. My point behind all of that is she is clearly on a mission. Right? Like, this isn't...
But it doesn't surprise me. It sounds like this is something she probably replayed doing over and over until she was like, all right, I'm doing it.
I agree with you. Kara doesn't understand where she's going, though. Right? So as much as she knows her sister is, like, on this journey, Kara's like, I still want to understand why, how, who, what, when, where, all the things. So Kara enlists the help of Nicole, the roommate, and Susie, Leah's best friend. They did what, in my opinion, police should have done. They go to the coffee shop where Leah hangs out. And they ask around, like, hey, does anyone come here often? What's the deal? And they end up meeting this woman named Janine. She's Leah's age. The two had been really bonded over Jack Kerouac's secondary novel, and I'm probably going to mispronounce this, but it's The Dharma Bums. And it's all based on Desolation Peak in Washington State.
Okay, now we're getting somewhere.
Exactly. And Leah had told Janine she wanted to go there. Great. So now we know where she's going, right? Like, great. We know she packed up, she left, she did all the things. Okay, so now we all see a common goal for the trip. They don't love the idea still, but Kara's like, I'm just going to keep an eye on her bank account, and I'll know she's good, right? And she'll be back soon. Unfortunately, that March 13th transaction in Brooks, Oregon, it happens just after midnight, which I hate things that happen in the early morning hours. Sounds like it happened between 1 and 2 a.m.
I know.
Is the last transaction. So, now that happens March 13th. March 18th is Kara's birthday. She doesn't stress because she knows Leah has a good sum of cash on her. But she's like, why did she stop using her debit card? Now, she's hoping that Leah will call her and say happy birthday today. So she can be like, hey, where are you? What's going on? She goes to work, it sounds like. She came home and there's a note in the door. It's from the Durham County Sheriff's Office.
What?
And they advise her to call the Whatcom County Sheriff's Office in Bellingham, Washington. So, Kara, panicking, right, calls them. And she gets a hold of the detective who tells her the following. And a lot of this is going to be directly quoted. And I'll post the sources. Early that morning, a couple jogging along Canyon Creek Road, which is a side road of Mountain Baker Highway that serves isolated residences and logging camps, noticed articles of clothing on the side of the road. Some had been tied to trees and branches. So they walked over to kind of investigate, and below the embankment was Leah's Jeep severely damaged.
This is like the compilation of several recent cases we've done.
I agree with you. No one was with the Jeep. But Washington State Patrol determined the Jeep had been traveling at about 40 miles an hour when it went off the road and it was accelerating.
This is alarming.
Now, this is where I'm going to tell you the next part. There is no blood or signs of injury inside the car. The seatbelt was not stretched, and there is no shadow marks in any of the glass. Law enforcement took this to mean there may have been no one inside the Jeep when it crashed.
Sounds like a movie. Sounds like, how did that happen?
There's two things I want to talk about now. Blankets and pillows were hung inside the windows, suggested that it had been used for shelter. But Leah's passport, her checkbook, her license, her clothes, her guitar, her CDs, and her cat carrier and cat food were all found in the car.
But no cat?
No cat. Also, $2,500 was in the car, which is the remainder of that $3,000. Now, Sergeant Kevin McFadden of the Whatcom County Sheriff's Office says, quote, "With the speed the vehicle was traveling and the amount of damage to the vehicle, you would anticipate some type of injury to the person inside. At least some type of evidence to indicate contact damage, that a person had been inside. But there was no blood inside the SUV or the surrounding area. There's nothing to indicate the wheel was tied and it was pushed off the road. We couldn't find any marks on the back that indicating anyone pushed it to where it was. But if you had somebody driving the vehicle and they jumped out, you would have taken your life into your own hands trying to jump out of the vehicle. But we brought in dogs and we brought in search and rescue. And we did a complete grid search and we were not able to find any indication that anybody had left that vehicle."
This is a real, like, what the heck happened?
It really is. So, two things that are happened next. Kara and Heath, Leah's siblings, get on a plane to fly to Washington. Right? Like, we have to be there. Leah, this is the only thing I'm going to say she's lucky about. She crossed state lines, so the FBI is called in to look at the case.
Yes. I suppose this could have gotten worse if it didn't play out that way. Still awful.
Okay, so right now, there's no evidence of a crime, right?
Oh, true, true, fair.
So Leah's siblings go through her stuff. Investigators did process the car, but they gave all Leah's stuff. They gave all Leah's stuff to her siblings. They find two things, one alarming and one helpful. Under a floor mat, they find Leah's mom's engagement ring, which Leah has worn since the day after her mom died. So everyone's like, she wouldn't have taken it off. Wouldn't have happened. But they find a little box, and her brother in the Disappeared episode explains it like a little box of, like, trinkets of mementos of this trip. And in it is a ticket stub for a movie at Bellingham Bellis Fair Shopping Mall for March 13th at 2:10 to see American Beauty. So just to recap, March 13th, just after midnight, she gets gas in Brooks, Oregon. And 2:10, the same day, okay, she's seeing a movie. It's only about a five-hour drive. I say only, but like, she theoretically could have pulled over at midnight, got gas, slept, and driven, and still been there at 2:10.
Okay.
So investigators team up with Kara and Heath, and they go to the mall to see if they can find any more information. Bingo. They go to the only restaurant in the mall and get information. Leah was seen there. The restaurant patrons remember her. Media gets involved and runs the story.
Boy, I always wonder if someone came up to me with a photograph.
I would not remember.
If I passed them in the store or something and they said, "Do you recognize this person?" Would I?
I don't know. But police run a photo of her and the story. And now, you guys know that I love this so much. We don't know the names of any suspects or any witnesses. So I'm going to tell you about man number one and man number two. Okay?
Great.
Man number one calls police. He's like, hey, just so you know, I just saw the news. And he calls like the day it ran. And he's like, I chatted with Leah at the bar at this restaurant before the movie. She was warm and friendly, excited. She talked about Jack Kerouac and her plan to see the U.S. Like, everything he could have told her, police say this is her, right? Like, this is valid. This is a great whatever. He also says she chatted with the man on the other side of her. We'll call him man number two. They track him down. I'm guessing via restaurant records and video, and I have no idea how they track him down, but they track him down. He gives them similar facts. They chatted, talked about Jack Kerouac, but he has a different ending of the story. He says she left with a man named Barry, and he gave police a description of Barry, and it was so good, police bring in a sketch artist. So police try to locate Barry. And no one at the restaurant, no transactions, and no one that worked there or this other man can corroborate Barry's literal existence.
This just keeps getting worse and worse.
Police pull the gas station footage from when she got gas just after midnight in Brooks, Oregon. The footage shows her alone, in good condition. I watched it. She's healthy. However, she keeps looking out at the parking lot. And obviously, they had no cameras in the parking lot. Now, there's a big to-do about this. You know, her looking in the parking lot. Here's where I sort of fall on that. If I leave my car running or leave valuables in the car and I run into a store, I am aware of my car. If my dog is in my car, I look at my car to make sure my dog's good. She had her cat.
That was my first thought.
She had cash. And all of her belongings were in her car. I am not weirded out by it being 1 in the morning and her wanting to keep an eye on her car. Media, again, runs the story. A witness told authority. They get a witness. They tell authorities that him and his wife said they saw her at a gas station in Everett, Washington, shortly after her vehicle was abandoned. She appeared disoriented and did not recall her identity. However, when police start asking him questions, he got nervous and hung up. Authorities say that they believe his sighting could be valid, and they don't know why he panicked.
What?
Leah's sister and brother fly back to North Carolina, but do all the things. They do media, they do interviews. Kara says it perfectly on Larry King. By the time Leah was 22, she had lost both of her parents, and here she is on the verge of graduating from college. And I think she felt really lost and didn't have a lot of direction. And this trip was a soul-searching trip. But she goes on to say,
I don't know. I mean, sometimes I wonder if we label something as someone feeling lost when they've had experiences like Leah has and they're not sure where to go. But maybe it's not lost. Maybe they are... finding direction. Like, it's,
yes, I agree with you.
Being lost sounds so bleak.
Well, she was on to say, I understand Leah's needing to get away and find peace within herself. But considering the loss that our family has experienced, basically, Kara knows that Leah wouldn't just leave her family. Like, after losing both of her parents and knowing what they had been through as siblings, like, I think about how I feel if, God forbid, Jed and I lost our parents and had only each other. I would never just abandon her. And she wouldn't to me.
See, I can see abandoning your life, right? But what I can't see is how it would have turned from her writing this note, leaving instructions, having good wishes for everybody, into suddenly on this trip she decides, you know what? I'm done with my family. Who needs them?
I agree with you. So time passes, no clues, no progress. So the Whatcom County Sheriff's Department calls Kara, who thankfully, is her power of attorney, and says, hey, what do you want us to do with Leah's car? Tara has done, when I say every single thing right, I mean every single thing. She says, listen, I've heard of cases that have been solved 10 years later by physical evidence, so I want you to keep it in impound. Like, smart girl. 6 years go by. Detective retires. New detectives come in as a cold case. And they review the file. And they realize the car wasn't fully processed. But thanks to Kara, they still have it. The car was not examined by a mechanic in 2000.
I'm just glad to hear that this isn't one of those stories where everything was done right. And then the police are like, whoops. We don't know what happened to it.
No, they did everything right. And they find this, they bring a mechanic in, they have him look at it. Now, the disappeared episode, I'm going to tell you what they say. And I'll tell you what the mainstream media says. And then I'm going to tell you what I've been told. Okay. A wire had been cut on the starter relay, which, according to disappeared, it allows the car to accelerate without anyone having pushing the gas pedal. So my husband is a car junkie, right? Like, he can do things with cars. So I was like, hey, can you walk me through what that would look like? And he was like, well, first of all, I don't know where you got your information because the starter relay has nothing to do with an acceleration. And I was like, okay. So I hand him my laptop and I'm like, can you watch this 30 seconds disappeared? And he watches it and he was like, okay, so I don't understand. But what I can tell you is a starter relay would allow someone to start the car without the ignition, basically. But he's like, I don't know how they would get it to accelerate. But if that's what they're saying, they must have, but it must have been by another means. Either way, the car had been tampered with, is what it comes down to. Now, they find a fingerprint under the hood and male DNA on Lita's clothing in the car. Guess who was a mechanic?
Barry?
Man number two.
Oh.
Man number two that pointed them to Barry. Also, man number two had moved out of the country.
Get out.
So they call Canadian authorities and say, hey, we need his fingerprints. Fingerprints do not match. But they're waiting for his DNA. Okay, that was in 2011. There has been nothing more about his DNA since then.
What do you take from that?
There have been, they've done repeated searches, and not only have they brought in cadaver dogs, they've brought in metal detectors because Leah has a metal rod in her femur.
Wow, good point.
And that's the end. Okay, so there's a lot that happened, right? Like, I kept being like, when am I going to stop writing? When am I going to stop writing? When I was writing this.
Yeah, I know that this case was a little bit more covered than some of the others we've been doing recently. So I knew when I recognized the name that there was going to be a little bit more to this.
There are theories, right? First of all, I guess, what do you think happened to start with?
My thought from beginning to end really is a case of random foul play. This girl's traveling alone and someone saw an opportunity. Beyond that, I don't know how it would have played out. And that doesn't really answer where she is. But I don't think that she died by suicide, left her life or anything like that, especially 22 years later or so?
Yes. I agree with you. For me, she literally wrote, I am not suicidal. There are several theories. They think that, like, either she got in a car accident and was disoriented and wandered. She got in a car accident and was picked up by someone with sinister intentions. She encountered someone on her travels with sinister intentions. Man number two is a person of interest.
I don't know that I can completely get behind her. I just don't think it's a very strong theory that she got in a car accident and was disoriented, because she likely would have been witnessed in other places. If she collapsed and succumbed to some injury, I think she would have been found.
Okay, Bryce LaPisa? Rico Harris?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, because we just did a case a couple of weeks ago where I firmly believe that he just hasn't been found yet.
Right.
So that is fair. See, context means everything. It really can lead you in a whole bunch of different directions, and we're all emotional beings. And we can come up with one theory that matches another case that is a completely different theory.
I agree with you. I see a lot of Ismora Murray, to be honest with you, in this.
Oh, wow, you're right. Yeah.
But I really do think this has to be foul play.
Well, I personally believe Maura Murray's foul play, so.
Right, but I think that's where this has to end up. Because even if she got in the car accident, like you said, well, first of all, where is her cat?
I mean, if she got in a car accident and the cat was not in a crate and the door was left open or open for a minute, it's any opportunity for a cat to get loose. And we're not going to find that cat 21 years later. We wouldn't have found that cat a year or two later.
I mean, I agree with you. Now, let me ask you a question. There's a lot to do on the Reddit about, like, her maybe. Now, I want to make this very clear. Her family has never said anything about a mental illness, ever. People have said that she could have been having a mental break or a manic episode. And I don't know anything about that. Like, I just don't. Like, I think she was pretty clear-headed.
Not enough context for me. A mental break can come at unpredictable times, but without having any symptoms whatsoever makes it harder for me to be convinced or have enough evidence to talk about a theory.
Okay. All right. So let's back up. We're both comfortable saying she did not die by suicide, right?
Yes, it would be a very small chance. I mean, she could have been saying that so no one came after her or whatever, but I'm willing to say that based on the other evidence in her life of wanting the adventure, wanting a lifestyle that is based on exploring the world, exploring herself, I don't necessarily see that.
I agree with you. So I really do believe that, I guess I have a challenge with, like, what the heck happened to the car, and is this guy involved? I don't know why.
That's my biggest gripe, I think.
Which part? Which one of those? The car or the guy?
The car more than the
guy. Or both.
What the heck happened in that situation with the car?
Yeah, like, there's allusion that maybe someone else was living in the car because of the sheets over the windows or whatever, but I would assume they would have stolen something. You're not just going to find an abandoned car after a car accident, make a home in it, and then not take anything.
Yeah. And what's to say she's not doing that to save money?
That's sort of where I fall. Is, could she have just done that to sleep in a car a couple nights?
Because she probably isn't going to find that many hotels or motels that are going to allow her to bring in her cat.
That's true.
So she could be either saving money, or she knows that many places won't allow that. Or she might be trying to explore places and sleep out in the middle of nowhere because she wants to be just seeing what that experience is like.
Yes. And all right, so let's break down this guy then, this statement. Guy number one calls the police the minute he sees it. He says, hey, she talked about Jack Kerouac. She talked about her travels. She talked about being from North Carolina, like the whole thing. He's the one that says there's also guy number two, who they have to track down. So for me, guy number one genuinely seems like a good human citizen.
So far, I could see that.
Guy number two, they track him down, and he says the same things, only he comes up with this guy named Barry. And he alludes that Leah knows him, but police can't verify his existence. So I struggle with that.
Right, and I feel like this is really speculative or pointed, but people that are being investigated that do have something to do with, or at least more knowledge, will almost always project onto another person. Like, oh, well, you should go check out somebody else. Take the heat off me.
Yes, and that's what
I know, that's pretty bold and maybe not fair, but any Dateline interview I've ever watched is like, oh yeah, there was another person, or she was talking to somebody else, or he was, you know, had a buddy here or there, whatever.
Yeah, it's so specific that it made law enforcement pause, because he was like, oh, it was Barry, and here's the information. But, like, no one else saw him? There was no credit card transaction?
I'm sorry, too. I will say I'm really bad with names. I meet someone and I will not remember their name. I might remember details such as guy number one who was like, oh yeah, North Carolina, Jack Caraway, blah, blah, blah. But if I meet you, I am never going to remember your name.
I agree with that.
So he meets Leah. He remembers details about Leah. Remembers her name. Meets this guy named Barry. Can't tell if I'm correct. Can't tell you any details about him. But remembers his name.
And what he looks like. He can describe him. That's it.
But he can't say like, oh, Barry, I remember he was telling me he, I don't know, works at the 7-Eleven and he's been in the area for over 20 years.
No.
Just his
None
name.
None of that. Just his name and what he looks like.
Just his name.
Just his name and what he looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's weird, too. But there's nothing to actually tie him to anything that may have happened.
All I'm saying is I understand why the police's ears perked up a bit.
And the fact that he's a mechanic and the car was tampered with?
So, yeah.
All right. So, all we've agreed is it's probably foul play. And do you want to open it up to everyone else?
Yeah. I feel, not that there's a lot of evidence I have to support this. You know, we don't have a ton of stuff left behind or whatever. But the way the events line up and some suspicious characters make me feel like it is random. Well, sort of random foul play. I mean, I think they obviously knew enough details about her to earn, or him, enough trust. But I think it was mainly there's this young, defenseless woman by herself outside of her comfort zone, and that puts her at a little higher risk, and they took advantage.
I agree with you. And if she had told, if let's say it is guy number two, and she had told him, you know, I'm traveling, Jack Kerouac, he knows it's an opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know where that would leave her to this day. And I'm so sorry that what happened to her, you know, in the accident left her with a rod in her. But I hope that that is a help rather than a hindrance to police in finding her. I unfortunately don't think the outlook is good.
I agree with you. It's been 22 years this year. So, yes. But I think it's important to keep telling her story because there's so many weird things. And like Kara said, things get solved years later based on evidence.
We've seen it alone a number of times this past year, and nothing stands out more to me than, and sadly, I can't remember the person's name, so I apologize, but that college student that went missing in the late 70s or perhaps even 80s, the car was found in a lake or a pond, and they were able to determine that the person, in fact, probably got in an accident and was just never recovered.
Yes.
Things like that can happen. So, yeah, I do think it's important to keep talking about it and find her so her family has some idea what happened instead of wondering where in the world she ended up.
I could not agree with you more.
And, of course, if there is foul play, always justice.
So, everyone, let's keep Leah's story alive and tell us your thoughts and your theories.
Yes, I look forward to hearing more of them and getting into some discussions with you all. And I guess that's it for today, right, Melissa?
Yeah, we'll be back next week with a whole new case.
All right, thanks.
Bye. Bye.
For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman.
Audio production by Caitlin Reynolds.